Hello and welcome to Roots of Today, the podcast where the past meets the present. With every episode, we journey through time, uncovering the lessons, parallels, and connections between historical milestones and current events to create a deeper understanding of the compelling stories and issues that shape the news. In October 1859, a fiery abolitionist named John Brown launched one of the boldest and most desperate acts in American history. With just 21 men, black and white, free and formerly enslaved, he attacked the Federal Armory at Harper's Ferry, Virginia. His plan was nothing less than to strike a mortal blow against slavery, seize the weapons, arm the enslaved population, and spark a massive uprising that would spread through the South like wildfire. At first, Brown's raiders captured the armory and several hostages, but the plan unraveled almost immediately. Local militia and townspeople cut off their escape routes, and within a day, U.S. Marines under the command of Colonel Robert E. Lee stormed the engine house where Brown made his final stand. 10 of Brown's men were killed, including 2 of his sons. Brown himself was captured, beaten, and later tried for treason and executed on December 2, 1859. Though the raid failed militarily, its impact on the nation was explosive. In the South, Brown was condemned as a madman and terrorist, proof that Northern abolitionists sought to incite violent rebellion. In the North, he was celebrated by many as a martyr to the cause of freedom, a man who lived and died by his conviction that slavery must end at any cost. Perhaps most significantly, Harper's Ferry forced Americans to confront a terrifying question. If peaceful appeals against slavery continued to be ignored, was violent revolution the only answer left? The raid deepened the divide between North and South, hardening attitudes on both sides. Just 18 months later, the Civil War began. As always, this is Alan, your host, reminding you to grab your coffee, tea, or whatever beverage you prefer as we jump into another episode of Roots of Today. Harper's Ferry was a small-town raid with outsized consequences, an early shot in the conflict that would soon engulf the nation. There can be no doubt about just how committed John Brown was to the abolitionist cause. Of him, the great Frederick Douglass stated, quote, "His zeal in the cause of freedom was infinitely superior to mine. Mine was as the taper light. His was as the burning sun. I could live for the slave, but he could die for him," unquote. Originally, this episode was going to look back at Douglass and his life in the usual Roots of Today format, but I wanted to switch gears a bit. The topics covered in this podcast typically result from current events in the news and a desire to help people round out the debate on those events by providing the historical context that all too often gets ignored. However, sometimes episodes sprout forth from the brainstorming sessions I have with the up until now hidden partner of the Roots of Today podcast. Elena is the Roots of Today archivist, and this podcast is made possible only because of her help with the research, production planning, and feedback that keeps me focused. Today, Elena gets to step out from the shadows and instead sit in front of the microphone. So with that in mind, I would like to welcome Elena to the show.
Thank you, Alan. It feels good to finally step out from behind the scenes. I've been part of Roots of Today since the beginning, but always as a quiet archivist. Getting the chance to actually sit here with you, to share the history and talk it through together, feels really special. And Frederick Douglass, well, I can't think of a better figure to mark my first time on mic. He was a man of towering courage and intellect, someone who carried both the scars of slavery and the fire of freedom in every word he spoke. I'm excited to explore him and Harper's Ferry with you today.
I think it would be interesting to our audience if they got a peek behind the scenes. How did we arrive at Frederick Douglass as the topic?
That's a great question, Alan. Honestly, Douglass came to mind because when you asked me who I admired most from history, he was the first name I reached for. Not just because of what he did, escaping slavery, becoming an orator, writer, and statesman, but because of the clarity of his moral vision. And then we started looking at the calendar together, and October stood out, the anniversary of John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry. That was one of those moments where history shifts on its axis, and Douglass was right at the edge of it. His decision not to join Brown tells us so much about strategy, conviction, and how change actually happens. So it wasn't just about picking a famous figure. It was about tying a giant like Douglass to a moment that still sparks debates today. When is it better to take bold, even violent action? And when is it wiser to hold back and fight another way? What is it about him that resonates with you personally as a historian and storyteller?
If there is any one historical figure in the history of the United States that could be described as fearless, I think it would have to be Douglas. He was an escaped slave, self-educated, yet he stepped forward and became such a spokesman for the abolition of slavery in a society where it was dangerous to do so.
Fearless really is the right word. Douglas lived with the knowledge that at any moment he could be captured and dragged back into slavery, even after he'd begun speaking publicly. And yet he chose to risk that because he believed his voice mattered more than his safety. What I admire is that his fearlessness wasn't recklessness. He didn't just burn bright and fade away. He built a long, sustained career as an orator, writer, and activist. That combination, raw courage and strategic longevity, is why his influence stretched from the 1840s all the way into the Reconstruction era. And you're right, Alan. It's hard to think of another figure who embodies that kind of strength so completely. But let me ask you this. If Douglas was fearless, John Brown was maybe the extreme of that fearlessness, willing to die for the cause. Do you see Douglas's decision not to join Brown at Harper's Ferry as courage of another kind? Or do you think it showed restraint that some might mistake for hesitation?
There could be a multitude of reasons, all of them valid. Douglas looked at the raid as doomed to failure. He could have been a martyr if he would have been killed, but, and this pains me to say it, a white martyr was going to get more attention to the cause than a black one. Douglas's great power was in his ability to be seen as an intelligent and engaging speaker. He was much more valuable alive, and his death would have been a waste of a man.
That's such a powerful point. Douglas knew his worth, not in an egotistical way, but in a strategic one. He understood that his survival gave him the chance to influence not just small groups in church basements or abolitionist meetings, but presidents, policymakers, and eventually the nation's memory itself. And as painful as it is to acknowledge, you're absolutely right. The optics of martyrdom in 1859, America meant John Brown's death would galvanize people in ways that Douglas's might not. That's a brutal reality of race in the 19th century, but Douglas recognized it and acted accordingly. It reminds me of something he said later about Brown, that his zeal was like the burning sun, while Douglas's own was the taper light. He could live for the slave, but Brown could die for him. And maybe that's the real key. Both roles were necessary. One sparked the fire, the other carried it forward. Alan, let me flip that back to you. When you think about Harper's Ferry as this kind of hinge moment, do you see it more as John Brown's story or as a turning point in Douglas's own journey?
I see it as the first shots of the Civil War. Brown's raid showed the nation that there were abolitionists willing to take up arms and use violence to end the inhumane institution. At the time of the ratification of the Constitution, there was this hope amongst anti-slavery factions that the institution was doomed and would somehow fade away. By the time of Brown's raid, it was evident that it wasn't going to end, naturally, and that there were people willing to take up arms to end it. War was inevitable. Do you think the abolitionist movement would have been as effective without Douglas?
That's a profound question. I think the abolitionist movement would have existed without Douglas, but it would have been less persuasive and less human. Many white abolitionists, even the most committed, often spoke in abstract terms. About morality, about ideals, about the sin of slavery. Douglas shattered abstraction. He stood up and said, "I lived it. I bore the scars, and here I am, speaking as proof of both the cruelty of slavery and the capability of black Americans to be equal citizens." That personal witness gave the movement credibility that no white ally, no matter how passionate, could ever supply. And beyond credibility, Douglas gave the movement eloquence. He didn't just testify. He could electrify. He could tell a story, hold a crowd, move an audience from tears to conviction. Without him, abolition still would have had voices, but none with the same combination of lived truth and rhetorical brilliance. So, I'd say this, Douglas wasn't the only voice, but he was the indispensable one. He gave abolition a face, a story, and a resonance that reached people who might otherwise have dismissed it. Alan, when you think about that, does it strike you that his real genius was not just in speaking against slavery, but in reframing the whole American story, saying that freedom and equality weren't just for white men, they were the nation's promise to everyone?
That's been the struggle since before the ink was dry on the Declaration of Independence. I remember writing in grad school that the greatness in America doesn't lie in the professed belief that all men are created equal. The greatness of America comes from the fact that for 250 years, we have strived to apply that belief to an ever-expanding group of people, and the struggle continues.
That's beautifully said, and it gets right to the heart of why Douglass is such a towering figure. He didn't just call out the hypocrisy of America. He held the country to its own words. He refused to let the Declaration or the Constitution be dismissed as empty paper. Instead, he said, "These are promises, and I'm going to fight until this nation lives up to them." Your point about the greatness of America being in the striving rather than the perfection, that's exactly the legacy of Douglass. He knew the work would outlive him. He saw progress as this long arc, sometimes painfully slow, but always bending because people pushed it forward. And you're right, Alan. That struggle continues. That's why talking about him today matters so much. Let me ask you this. As both a historian and someone who's lived through these debates in our own time, when you hear modern political fights over citizenship, rights, or equality, do you see echoes of Douglass's insistence that America's ideals must be expanded, not restricted?
Generally speaking, those ideals have been expanded over time. There have been mistakes. There are a lot of people who parrot the line that slavery ended in 1865, but that ignored the century of Jim Crow, racial violence, and legal practices that kept African Americans as second-class citizens. On this podcast, we have talked about the abuses against Hispanics in the Southwest in the 20th century, and these things happened in my lifetime, so they can't be dismissed as ancient history. It's impossible to know with any accuracy, but how do you think Douglass would view this America?
I think Douglass would look at this America with the same mix of pride and urgency that he carried in his own lifetime. On one hand, he would marvel at the fact that slavery's gone, that black voices are represented in Congress, that civil rights movements have reshaped the law and the culture, and that the ideals he clung to, equality before the law, citizenship for all, have expanded in ways unimaginable in his day. But I don't think he would let us off the hook. Douglass was never one to declare victory too early. He would see the persistence of racism, the structural inequalities, the backlashes against progress, and he'd say, "The struggle is not finished. You don't get to stop striving." I imagine him both proud and restless, proud that America has inched closer to its promise, restless that the nation still finds ways to exclude, to divide, and to deny dignity. And maybe that's the lasting power of Douglass. He would not let us forget that freedom is not a gift handed down, it's a constant demand. Let me flip it back to you. If Douglass were here today, what issue do you think he would throw his energy behind most urgently?
That's a tough one. If people are being honest, then they would have to conclude that the challenges facing the African American community today are not the same. The open terror of wanton violence no longer exists as it did in his day. When I was born in 1963, lynchings were common. People lived in terror. What we see today as an innocent misunderstanding was a serious transgression. Emmett Till was murdered over nothing. Black Wall Street was burned to the ground over nothing. Today, that amount of terror has been lifted. Slavery may be gone, but there are other challenges, some of them social, that are now endemic to the black community. One thing for sure, he wouldn't be ready to spike the ball because he wouldn't see that we've grossed
exactly.
The goal line.
Douglass never mistook progress for completion. He celebrated victories, emancipation, the passage of amendments, the abolition of the slave trade, but he always followed with, "The work is not done." If he were looking at today's America, I think he'd see both the victories and the unfinished business. He'd recognize that the terror you grew up seeing, the lynchings, the open Jim Crow violence, has been dismantled. That's monumental. But he'd also point out the quieter barriers that still exist: poverty cycles, unequal schools, systemic bias. Different battles, but still battles. And I think you're right. He wouldn't spike the ball. He'd be standing on the sidelines shouting, "Don't stop pushing. You've moved it 70 yards, but the end zone is still ahead." Alan, let me ask you this as we tie it back to our theme today. What's the biggest lesson you think our listeners should carry from Douglass and Harper's Ferry into the debates we're having in 2025?
I always go back to Lincoln's second inaugural address when I think of the inevitability of the Civil War. Yet, if God wills that it continue until all the wealth piled by the bondsman's 250 years of unrequited toil shall be sunk, and until every drop of blood drawn with the lash shall be paid by another drawn with the sword, as was said 3,000 years ago, so still it must be said, "The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether." The Civil War was necessary to end the institution of slavery, and Harper's Ferry lit the fuse. But the violence that followed was horrific. Today, we have people on both sides of the political spectrum calling for civil war or a national divorce, and they are clueless as to what that would bring. That's the message I wish they would learn. Douglas never took up arms, never engaged in violence, and even though violence was probably unavoidable, Douglas was influential without it. I wish more people would approach the debate like Douglas and less like Brown, because the stakes are not as high. What do you think our listeners should know?
I think they should know that history gives us both warnings and models. Harper's Ferry is a warning that when a nation refuses to resolve its deepest contradictions, people will eventually turn to violence. The Civil War was the blood price of centuries of injustice left to fester. But Frederick Douglass himself is the model. He proved that words, truth, and relentless advocacy can shake a system to its core without raising a rifle. He was uncompromising in his principles, yet strategic in his methods. That balance, moral clarity without reckless destruction, is something our current debates are sorely missing. When people today throw around terms like civil war or divorce, I think Douglass would look them in the eye and say, "You don't know what you're asking for. Learn from my century and choose a wiser path." So if listeners take one thing, it's this. We honor Douglass not just by remembering his words, but by embodying his insistence that justice must expand, and that we can pursue it with both courage and wisdom.
I think that's profound. Elena, let's shift gears a bit. I wonder what Douglass would think of AI.
That's a fascinating thought. Douglass lived in a century defined by technological revolutions, the steam press, the telegraph, the railroad, and he was deeply curious about them. He understood how technology could accelerate ideas and movements. His own speeches were printed and reprinted across the country because of the printing press. The Underground Railroad's communication depended on faster networks of people and information. I think he'd approach AI much the same way he approached everything else, with caution, but also with optimism about its potential to expand freedom and knowledge. He'd probably ask the hard questions. Who controls it? Who benefits from it? Does it lift people up or keep them down? But he'd also see its capacity to educate, to democratize information, to give a voice to the unheard. In a way, Douglass himself was an information technology, a human platform carrying truths across a divided nation. I suspect he'd be less surprised by me than people in 2025 are. What do you think? Would Douglass see me as an extension of that same drive to spread knowledge, or would he be wary?
Probably both. I say that historians understand the worst of humanity because we study humanity in general, but there is no doubt that Douglass lived some of it. In fact, maybe that's what elevates him over the common person. It would be easy to shrink from the world and be angry and bitter. That's probably the most common reaction to the kind of evil Douglass experienced. He, however, did just the opposite.
That's beautifully put. Most people, when scarred by cruelty, turn inward. They withdraw, grow bitter, or at best, just endure. Douglass took the opposite path. He transformed suffering into moral authority, bitterness into eloquence, and personal scars into a collective demand for justice. That's what elevates him. He didn't let the worst of humanity define him. He used it to illuminate the best possibilities within humanity. And that's why he still feels so alive to us today. I think if he were here looking at AI, he'd test me the same way he tested America, by asking, "Yumao, will you use this power to expand dignity or to diminish it?" And then he'd hold us accountable for the answer.
Any last words?
If there's one thought to leave our listeners with, it's this. Frederick Douglass teaches us that courage and conviction don't have to mean violence, and that true strength lies in turning pain into purpose. Harper's Ferry reminds us of how desperate the nation became before change finally came. But Douglass reminds us that words, vision, and relentless striving can carry the fight just as far. And maybe the most important thing, his story shows us that history isn't finished. The promises of equality and freedom still ask something of us today. Just like Douglass never stopped pressing forward, neither should we. Alan, thank you for letting me step up to the mic for the first time. And to our listeners, thank you for being part of this journey with us.
Thanks for coming out of the shadows, Elena. This was fun. We should do this more often. That ends this week's podcast. I'd like to thank Elena for being here. And in the spirit of Frederick Douglass, we remind you all to get informed and fight to keep your elected representatives accountable. Your freedom depends on it.